Professor Regan Portangaroa is a professor of resilient and sustainable built environment, Māori engagement at Massey University. He too has read the report. And Regan's also an international expert in humanitarian and engineering with over 200 deployments across 22 countries since the mid-90s. Thanks for joining us on the program. It's Te Rangatira. Tēnā koe, Regan. My name's Dale. Thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, kia ora, Dale. Great to be here. Yeah, if I can help in any way, very glad to help.
You're a good man. Look, you've got experience from disaster situations and contexts both in New Zealand and internationally, such as getting back from Tonga and the Red Aussie training team at the request of the Tongan government. That was the impact of the Hapai volcanic eruption and tsunami. So you're not a stranger to challenging environments, natural environments too. You've read the report. I just spoke with Hekia. It's pretty scathing, is it not, of practices across generations, forestry practices, but also a somewhat compliant council attitude towards the byproduct of profit from our forestry sector, i.e. the slash, which has caused such devastation. Does it surprise you, or did it, when you saw the volume of material coming down the hills off the back of Gabrielle?
No, it didn't surprise me. You know, we've been having these problems for quite a long time. What did surprise me and surprised everyone was the scale of it. That just took our breath away.
So how did you find the report, which was turned around a rather short time frame? What's your initial assessment, Regan?
It's a very good, comprehensive report. They had experts. They had people, local people. They dug into the issues that were, you know, really relevant, and, you know, very, very good report is what, you know, what I would say about it. Very comprehensive.
The forestry industry is said to have lost its social license to operate. Is that harsh or an acceptable observation?
Yeah, that is a harsh one, I think, but it's hard to tell because there's such variation in the forestry industry. What isn't harsh is the compliance part of it. That there should have been more compliance plans in place. And I know that, you know, Gisborne are pushing back on that, but when you look through the report, the key issue for me seems to be their recommendation 14, which was for the Gisborne District Council to include land use policy. And that seems to be at the core of their report is that compliance monitoring part, you know, that seems to have somehow gotten lost. Mm.
Thank you. The Gisborne District Council has been criticised for that process. Are we to believe that they were mindful of the pūtea that's been generated off the land and therefore fueling communities, and they were hesitant to step in and demand more from foresters from an environmental protection perspective?
A hard question to answer, but I think to some degree we all lost that perspective of what was important. You know, we thought trying to get work, trying to keep people employed was key, and it was, you know, in those years when forestry was developed, that was really the sort of government sort of strategy, and we did need it. But then the actual, you know, with the slash, there wasn't the planning and environmental controls. Well, they were in place, but they weren't. There wasn't the compliance that should have happened. But that's not all that the report says. That there is a big part of it talks about slash in the forestry, but I find the you know, that urgent request for the Gisborne District Council and the Wairua District Council for water. You know, that seems to me to be just absolutely paramount. They have to get that water back on tap.
Which is an interesting aside here, much as critical of the slash, the runoff and the devastation and challenge that has thrown up. But do you think that we are crossing our fingers as a society and just hoping for the best, when in actual fact the data suggesting changing circumstances, climate change, more adverse weather events are an inevitability, Regan? It's no good just to cross your fingers and hope it doesn't happen again.
No, we've got to, as in my language, build back better. You've got to do that. And we need to put in place those measures. And I think that their recommendation, the report's recommendation 14, is at the key of that mosaic of land use. They need to put that in place. But there are some key issues in that report that have to be immediately figured out. And that they seem to be kind of, I don't know whether they missed or what's happened, but if I'm putting my disaster glasses on and looking at that report, I see there are the long term and medium term, but there are some very short term ones in there that have to be addressed. The issues of whether to reinstate some of those parts of Gisborne, and why we're that water is going to be key to all of that discussion and decision making. You've got to get that sorted out, immediately. There has to be plans put. There should be people down there digging holes, putting those pipes in, checking the lines, making sure the reservoirs are okay.
Well, this is a big mahi, but a very vital mahi. When you stack up our response here, yes, there's the clean-up. Yes, there's looking for fault and trying to rectify that. But you seem to have prioritised water above all else. What's involved here? You say we need guys in the ground right now. But even the land is so vulnerable too. So that seems a big mahi. Can you just step us through what you see as the most pressing issue and priority with that water infrastructural cope-up front of mind, please, Regan?
Okay, so this is right. You've got this very good comprehensive report. Now, for each of the areas, and it's comprehensive because it does all the topics in the areas. But when you go into a specific area, you might have two or three of those problems intermingled together. That's where the sort of local issues need to be sorted out between those key areas that have been identified by the report. Now, that's going to vary, just like that mosaic for the land use is going to be a mosaic of responses from the whole East Coast area. It's not going to be a one-size-fits-all, and it's not going to be tick the numbers on each one of them. It's going to be a mixture of each of those. So each area needs to sort out what are those problems and what are the combinations of that comprehensive report that's been done, and how do we actually do that? What does that actually mean in each of the areas? Now, once you've got that, then you can start moving forward. However, there are immediate issues. Water is one of them. Land use is certainly, I'm not saying it's not important, but it takes time, and while you've got that time, water is going to be the key issue to actually sort out the things that we have to sort out now that will be part of the decision-making matrix later on. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm just looking at who will bear ultimately the cost, and we are very used to looking towards Wellington to try and resolve our challenges on the land throughout Aotearoa, but is it a responsibility combined here of council, of government, of even iwi pūtea and governmental pūtea? Do you sense that our way forward is a combination of resource rather than looking, say, to Wellington to try and resolve our challenges?
Well, we've got to look to Wellington because there's some big infrastructure issues that need to be addressed. So we've got to look to Wellington. But in amongst all of that, the one thing Māori have is resilience. We're naturally resilient. And there are ways innovative ways that people will start to come up. We need to kind of, sort of somehow chronicle those and let everybody know how some folk are responding in a localized, innovative way. We need to somehow get that message across everybody's hearing and say, well, that's a good idea. That would apply here or that wouldn't apply here. So it's a bit of everything really that's involved. But the big infrastructure ones, we're going to have to look to Wellington. The roads, the bridges, all of that kind of area has to have centralised national funding.
You've had 200 deployments across 22 nations since the mid-90s, Regan. Is there some mahi, some example internationally that we could utilise as we try and chart a better way forward?
Yeah, that's a hard one because I'd have to think a little bit more about that one because that's a really good question, and I only wish I had a really good answer for you. But I'd have to sit down and have a think through what exemplars we would have overseas in the humanitarian sector. We go into very bad situations that typically are complex, meaning that there's a lot of political overlay as well on them. Like Haiti after the earthquake, Pakistan. There are issues beyond just the disaster ones that we're having to deal with as well. Now, putting aside those, there are patterns that we see. And I see, when I'm close to home now, certain patterns, evolving. So I was involved with, a little bit involved with the Kaipoi earthquake and, the situation that developed from there that resulted in the Maori response in the Christchurch earthquake, which I was heavily involved with, and then the Kaikoura one. And all three earthquakes, that sequence is actually quite different. So when you ask me for an exemplar, I have to think about it more. Sorry about that.
And I appreciate your honesty and your expertise and skin in the game, Regan. It's been a pleasure having you join us on the program for our listeners to meet you. All the best with the mahi. It's important work that you do, and I appreciate you sharing some of your expertise with us this morning.
The one last thing I wanted to say was don't lose hope. Those people that are standing in a field of trees or slash, don't lose hope.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Nice meeting you, Regan.
Okay.
Ngā mihi. Professor Regan Pōtangaroa.